And welcome to another episode of the Dynasty Trades HQ podcast, brought to you by the Dynasty Football Network and DynastyFootballFactory.com. My name is Michael Sipes. You can find me on Twitter at FFBlitz. And I'm here with my partners, Jeremy Broen at... at DFF underscore Madman. I thought you'd say it again.
I said, sup, yo.
And Shane Manila at DFF underscore Shane.
Hello, friends.
Hello, Shane. So that was nice. We have a great show tonight. We have a guest tonight that we're very excited about. Mr. Matt Kelly is going to be here, and he's going to be discussing some rookies, some player values, just get his general thoughts on Dynasty and how he feels about some of the free agents that signed. And just we'll all just kind of hang out and have a good time. We also have a couple last-minute signings that happened today that we're going to discuss. And then at the end of the show, we're going to read a couple new reviews that we got that were really pretty amazing and give away a hat. But first, I wanted to mention that this podcast is brought to you by gtbets.eu, the official sponsor for the Dynasty Trades HQ podcast. Are you looking to get in on some action in today's games? Head on over to gtbets.eu for all your sports betting needs, with updated odds covering all major sports. The bottom line, gtbets.eu will have you placing your first bet within minutes with their simple-to-use registration process. So register now and earn up to $500 in free money. Simply add TradesHQ in the referred by field to get the highest possible welcome bonus. So when you go in there and sign up, just put in TradesHQ in the referred by field and you'll get a bonus and you'll get some free cash just by mentioning our name. And now, before we get to our guest, we wanted to speak about a couple of the signings that happened today, including from Shane's Super Bowl winning team, the Philadelphia Eagles. They signed Mike Wallace today.
He did. Yeah, the Eagles signed Mike Wallace. Contract details look like it was 1 year, $2.5 million, which is not bad when you consider that Torrey Smith was going to be basically fulfilling the same role, except dropping more passes for $5 million. So that's not bad at all. As far as fantasy purposes, I had you check the ADP for me.
Right.
And his ADP on our DFF mock drafts through the month of February, he had none. He
zero.
Had none. A none ADP.
Yeah,
so
out of the top 200 players drafted in our ADP mocks, Mike Wallace had no picks.
Which is, you know, it's weird. I know he didn't have what I'd say is a great year or a good year, but he definitely had a year where you could use him on your roster. Like we've said before, you're not going to have all wide receiver ones. Some cases, you're not going to have all wide receiver twos. In his case, you wouldn't even have a wide receiver three. You'd have a wide receiver four. But in a flex, I mean, I guess you could do worse than 10.1 points a game. I know he's a little inconsistent. And by a little, I mean very. But he was actually pretty consistent down the stretch there. Six out of the seven final weeks through week 16, because no one's playing in week 17, he had 10 or more fantasy points. And the week that he missed, he had 9.8. So that's actually not bad for your flex spot if you know you can get that.
In a couple years, the past couple years under with Joe Flacco, Mike Wallace had like 1,700 yards, and that offense was about as conservative as possible.
And he's going to a team that likes to throw the ball deep, and yeah. Wentz has a howitzer for an arm. So in best ball leagues, I'd be buying Mike Wallace, and quite honestly, I'd probably be buying him in most leagues, assuming that the price is probably around a third round or a fourth round rookie pick, you could probably snag him. So yeah. If you have any rookie drafts upcoming, I get and throw out a fourth for him. Even if you're not on a contending team, you could always sell him later for at worst, you know, cost.
Yeah. I think with the ADP, part of the reason he wasn't picked also, it makes sense what you're saying about wide receiver four, wide receiver five, whatever. But with the ADP, I think a lot of people didn't know where he was going, if he was going anywhere of value or whatever. So nobody bothered. But now that he's signed with a team like your team, then maybe he'll move up a little bit in ADP, or maybe people will try to trade him or grab him, like have him throw in, hey, throw in Mike Wallace and we'll do this deal type of thing, you know?
Yeah, I think I'd definitely do that. Ask for some Mike Wallace on the back end.
Well, the other person that signed today here in Miami was Frank Gore.
Yeah, well, good for him. I think that's great. You know, congratulations. I actually love Frank Gore. He's been playing since 1895. I mean, sorry, I think, was it 1995, 2005? I mean, the guy's been in the league for 12 years, right? So 2005, and he's always been a contributor. I just can't believe he's still playing. He's like 34, 35 years old. I don't think that's a big dent on Drake. You know, they just needed another body there going into the draft. I don't think it really changes things a ton from what we talked about on past episodes about Kenyon Drake. So I'm not worried about it. But, you know, good for Frank Gore. Because if you still own him, because I think I have him on a team. I didn't cut him yet. He might be valuable if Drake gets hurt or something early in the season. I mean, you might have a guy on a bye week even that can come in. I mean, I'm glad he's not retiring. I love that guy. I love him.
He's one of those guys that he doesn't get hurt, and he's always there, and everybody loves him in the locker room. And even living down here in Florida, my exterminator is really good friends with him, and he always tells me that guy never wants to stop playing. He wants to keep playing as much as he can. So,
wait, what?
Sounds like he's got a job in exterminator.
My exterminator?
Frank Gore?
Absolutely. The guy who comes and exterminates my house, he's friends with Frank Gore, and he told me that guy never wants to stop playing.
It seems like a story I got to hear all there.
I need
proof of this.
No problem. We'll talk about it. There's other stories about him as well. The only other signing that we were talking about maybe was Eric Ebron. I know, Shane, you wanted to mention something
huge.
About Yeah, go ahead.
Huge. Oh, Eric Ebron. He is with the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah.
And maybe they'll run some more two tight end sets this year.
Yeah, they will.
Yeah, they definitely have to, because I can't imagine. I don't even know what the contract terms were. So I'm still amazed that Detroit cut him. I mean, the guy's only 25 years old. So I don't know what's going on there. And he was a pretty good athlete, really good athlete. He was a good college player. I mean, they drafted him at 10 overall, and then just give up on him after, what, four seasons is shocking. If Andrew Luck comes back I'm thinking Ebron's a guy you can in two tight end leagues where, you know, you have to start two tight ends. He's a guy you might as well roster, try to buy low on. I don't think a lot of people didn't like him to begin with in the fantasy community, and him signing where Jack Doyle already lives probably doesn't help.
His value's better, you know, because of that. I mean, he did really well last year. We talked about his fantasy points and how great of a year he had. I think Shane, you brought that up on a past episode, and it's clear that he does have potential, and if you could get him at a good price, why not?
If weeks 14 – sorry, Jeremy, I apologize.
Yeah, just keep going, man.
No, I'm sorry, but just
there's a lot of apologizing going on.
You need to learn how to pause there, buddy.
I got no manners, basically raised by wolves. But what I was going to say is the playoff weeks 14, 15, 16, he could have brought you a title or helped you carry you to a title.
That's what I was alluding to when we talked about that on a previous episode. That was money.
That was one of the big surprises for me that they even let him go, because he ended up strong near the end, and I have him on a lot of teams because I was able to get him really cheap last year. So I was happy to see him end out strong, and then they cut him. But if like you say, if Luck comes back strong, and I still think he's a good player, so I would keep him. I don't know that I would go out there and trade too much for him, but maybe you can get him a little bit cheaper now anyways.
And that leaves Luke Wilson as the starting tight end in Detroit, huh?
Well, that and also, what is it, Michael Roberts? Is that who they drafted?
Oh, Michael Roberts is still there.
Yeah, they drafted him last year.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I had him stashed for a while.
Yeah. But that, you know, they'll do something different between now and, well, we always say that. You don't know right now. We're just taking guesses. But, yeah, they'll get somebody else in there. Maybe they'll draft somebody. But even then, you still have the other rookie. Yeah.
Not in the first round.
No, I'm just
saying they've been burned by Eric Ebron. I can't imagine they're ever going to draft a tight end in the first round.
No, probably not.
That high.
Well, the last guy we had here on our list that we wanted to talk about, Jeremy, was Michael Crabtree.
I just own a lot of Michael Crabtree, so I'm glad he went somewhere. I'm glad he's playing still, because I own him in a lot of places because he was such a value to draft him. Yeah, well, I mean, a lot I don't know people... how he's going to do in Ravens land, but I'm glad he's somewhere so I can, you know, either swing a deal and trade him now or, you know, use him for a while and trade him after.
Well, would you do that? I mean, he was productive for people that had him with Oakland. Are you looking for him or are you trying to move him?
I'm just holding him now and see how it shakes out. I mean, if he's doing awesome, I'll have a chance to move him at that point. Or if it's a team where I need him, you know, I'll certainly keep him. So it's definitely situational. I'm sure he'll do fine.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm at too with him. I'd probably hold him as well if I had him. I mean, unless somebody came knocking on my door looking for him, I wouldn't be opposed to moving on from him. Speaking of moving on, now, before we get to Matt Kelly, we wanted to tell you about the Fan-Controlled Football League.
Hell yeah! If you play Madden Franchise Mode, you will love the new Fan-Controlled Football League, where all personnel decisions, we're talking draft picks, play calls, it's all crowdsourced. And what the fans say goes, no matter what. So just say, for instance, Shane, he's picking his team. He's setting it all up, and he's playing against you. You're definitely going to beat him. Visit fcfl.io to learn more. That's fcfl.io, where you're in control. The FCFL.
Yeah, and that's awesome. And if anybody's really interested in that, we're going to have them on, I believe, what, next week, Shane, as a guest?
Yeah, next week we're going to have Ray Austin on, who is the commissioner of the actual Football League. He's been hitting the rounds. I've heard him on a couple podcasts. He's a really smart guy, really breaks it down well. He's an ex-NFL player. But, yeah, we'll get into him when we interview him next week.
Cool. All right. And then now we want to bring in our guest. We're really excited about this, to have the podfather himself, Mr. Matt Kelly.
Finger gun salute, gentlemen. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Yes. Welcome, Matt. We're very happy to have you here with us this evening. And for people that are out there listening, you could find Matt on Twitter at @fantasy_mansion. You could also find him on his very popular podcast, Roto Underworld Radio, and his website, playerprofiler.com.
Ah, Player Profiler. Yes, that's my website. Please go to playerprofiler.com. That's where you can find a unified player page that tells the story of every player in the NFL, now including offensive linemen, defensive linemen, linebackers, safeties. We have them all in there now, ladies and gentlemen. Very excited. We have the measurables. We have the workout metrics. We have the on-field efficiency. So it's the first truly comprehensive single player page, single point of entry. The one-stop shop on everything you want to know about a player is there. Go there. Check it out. Playerprofiler.com. Type in DJ Moore and let it just wash over you, the greatness.
Well, and that's great. Yeah, because DJ Moore was one of the people that Shane wanted to talk about tonight.
I got a hard on for DJ Moore. I took him at 105 in a startup, and then I got quizzed a little bit on it. Someone asking me if I liked him better than Juju. And I told them yes. I was only half lying. I think I actually do like him a lot better. Not a lot better, but I do like him better than Juju.
Well, we've seen Juju Smith-Schuster play in the NFL, so
he does.
For anyone
have
that's been successful in the NFL, he probably liked them better. We don't know what DJ Moore is, but the probabilities say that DJ Moore is probably going to be a very, very good NFL player. There are very few NFL players that have a 90th percentile or above dominator rating and breakout age and speed score. And if you just take those three metrics and find the handful of players that are in the 90th percentile across the board, I mean, it's a who's who list. And the beauty is that he looks like those players in terms of stature, the 6'2", 210 body type. And that's exactly what you're looking for. So he's like a faster, more explosive DeAndre Hopkins. You can think of him like that. You can think of him as a more versatile Amari Cooper, who's better after the catch. You can think of him as a whole bunch of different players in a very good way. We have him best comparable to Pierre Garçon, because if you remember, Pierre Garçon in his prime was a dynamic playmaker in the league. He led the NFL in targets 1 year. And if DJ Moore leads the league in targets in any given year, it will be a success.
So Matt agrees with my pick. So I won.
Your pick. You discover Shane's like Christopher Columbus of our show.
Yeah.
He's like Christopher Columbus discovering the New World. Shane discovered DJ Moore and Royce Freeman. No one knew these guys existed, but Shane found
them. Okay. No one did. Royce Freeman, how you feeling about him, Matt?
Royce Freeman's been around forever. He's been a dominant college player for 4 years. Everybody knows Royce Freeman. Everyone in Devy leagues has had Royce Freeman rostered for a long time. This is what I don't understand. I don't understand how the Devy community can pump up players after owning them for years. Yes. Like a Cortland Sutton, right? When that's justified, Cortland Sutton looks very good. Even in a weak draft class, he looks very good. The size-adjusted agility for Cortland Sutton was exceptional. I mean, he has Julian Edelman-like agility at 6'4". So that's incredibly impressive. But why not Royce Freeman? Why isn't Royce Freeman looked at very similarly to a Cortland Sutton that everyone's just been tracking for so many years, and he's just never disappointed? He's just always been at the top of college football at his position, which is what Royce Freeman has done. And then he went to the combine, and he outperformed expectations there, and yet still he's behind Kerryon Johnson and Ronald Jones in rankings, and it just doesn't make any sense. This guy is in the conversation for the running back that's next after the Mount Rushmore, because it's a very clear Mount Rushmore of these dominant every down players at the running back position. You have Saquon Barkley, of course, you have Darius Geis, you have Nick Chubb, and you have Rashad Penny. These are the guys that have been dominant college players that showed out at the combine and check all the boxes, including size, all the way out all the boxes checked for those guys. I mean, thank you. Just take any one of those four and you'll be very happy. Trust me. You'll be very happy in dynasty leagues. Don't overthink it. Just draft running back, get your young running backs is how you can win in dynasty leagues. You're very simple. Listen to this. This is going to be crazy. Okay. But you take established productive wide receivers and young running backs and you win dynasty leagues. That's how it works. So you do that, okay? But if after those big four, the argument is then for Royce Freeman, because no one else has his resume. And then he went out and he had exceptional size-adjusted agility, just like Cortland Sutton. So he's the Cortland Sutton of this draft class on so many levels. Again, the resume stretching back through time, Devy leaguers have been well acquainted with him for many years, and the exceptional size-adjusted agility. What's not to like? I don't get it.
Yeah, I've owned him on a bunch of Devy teams. Well, at least two. I say a bunch. I mean, two or three. I didn't check into that, but I've owned him for a long time, and I don't see anything negative either. But it's crazy that he just comes out of nowhere. He's ranked so low, and we talked about him on a previous show. There's really no reason to bump up Kerryon my way with Son Johnson.
Would you like a more explosive Jordan Howard with wiggle?
I will take that. Good? Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Would you like that? Would you like a more explosive Jordan Howard with wiggle, who's also better in the passing game? Does that sound good to you? Because that's exactly what Royce Freeman is.
Well, yeah, I was thinking more athletic C.J. Anderson or wiggly C.J. Anderson, but I mean, that's probably even better. You know, a zone runner.
No, because he's 6'2", 230.
Yeah.
So if you're 6'2", 230, you have if you're standing on a practice field and you're standing behind Royce Freeman and behind Jordan Howard, they're going to look like similar guys.
Yeah.
And then when you give them the football, a funny thing's going to happen. Jordan Howard's going to go down on first contact, and Royce Freeman is going to slide through and gain extra yards.
Right. And I can keep Royce Freeman on the field on third down, which is that's what I want in a running back. So I'm not sure why he's not ranked higher either.
So, yes, he's active enough in the passing game. He's not a non-factor in the passing game. That's all you're looking for, is just show some competence in the passing game. And he did that. Even Nick Chubb did that as a freshman at Georgia. It showed at least something. And he did it at the combine, too, in the passing drills, in the receiving drills. So I have no worries about Nick Chubb and Darius Geis' receiving capability. They're going to be on the field for enough downs, right? Even Melvin Gordon's taken off the field on some downs for Austin Ekeler, and he's still checking in at a 70% plus opportunity share. He's still giving you the touchdowns. He's still catching screen passes. So that's what Royce Freeman's going to give you. It's going to be great. Just enjoy Royce Freeman. Enjoy Rashad Penny. And don't overthink it. Don't get cute. with your Ronald Joneses.
But Ronald Jones is very explosive. They keep telling me he could be the next Jamal.
I've heard that. And yet somehow he doesn't catch passes at 205 pounds, which is a very big red flag. It's one of the great red flags in my time in this business is the 205-pound running back that doesn't catch passes. I mean, if there ever was a red flag on a player, I mean, it would be like one of those used car lot American flag-sized flags.
Well, you know, you speak about these running backs with the Mount Rushmore of guys and then this next tier. I know last week on your show you were talking about Royce Freeman going over possibly to with Jerick McKinnon over there in the 49ers.
What makes sense? I mean, these area scouts, one of the closest schools to the San Francisco 49ers is Oregon, actually, and they are local. That's why you see more prospects from New England end up with the Giants, end up with the Patriots. I mean, think about who was targeting Victor Cruz in free agency, right? Mm-hmm. As an undrafted free agent, he could have gone to the Patriots. He could have gone to the Giants. I mean, he went to UMass. That's what happens. So I expect it's that irrational, right? You would think the internet, right? Playerprofiler.com, they could look up anybody, but no, you see this happen all the time. So I can absolutely see Royce Freeman go to the San Francisco 49ers, who do not have a between the tackles grinder. Now, a lot of teams have a between the tackles grinder, and the missing piece is really that electric satellite back. Whereas the San Francisco 49ers, it's reversed. They have the Matt Breidas and they have the Jerick McKinnons and they have the Jeremy McNichols, but they don't have the between the tackles guy since Carlos Hyde left. So they're really needing that. And Royce Freeman is the best of those specialists. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, of course, you would rather have a Darius Geis, but he may not be there. He's going to be taken early. He may not make it to the 49ers in the second round. If he does, I think they'll consider Geis in the second round, too. It's a very tenuous position if you're a Jerick McKinnon dynasty owner, because right now his value may never be higher. So even if you love him and his potential, this running back class is so deep and there's such a clear need on that 49ers roster that it would be difficult for me not to jump at an opportunity to trade away Jerick McKinnon for, you know, if someone who's willing to overpay, you know, mm-hmm. if you want to overpay, I'm happy to, you know, exchange, right? I'm happy to do an exchange right now with Jerick McKinnon. And I love Jerick McKinnon. My location on Twitter was under Jerick McKinnon's bed. I've been ranting about Jerick McKinnon having an every down skill set for 4 years, but that doesn't mean I'm going to reject a dynasty trade in which an owner is trying to overpay for someone that I have on the roster. I mean, that's not how you win dynasty leagues. You need to be rational. You can't be emotional. So I won't be emotional about Jerick McKinnon. And I know right now I'm going to be hyper vigilant about listening to offers because now is the time that someone might get a little bit over their skis thinking about the possibilities of Jerick McKinnon with, oh my God, Kyle Shanahan. Oh my God. It's like, oh sure. Yeah. I'll take a 2019 first. And who else do you have on your roster? Ooh, that player looks interesting. I guess you don't want Duke Johnson anymore, right? They're going to draft Saquon Barkley and they just got so I'll take Duke Johnson back. Maybe a 2019 first. How does that sound? Does that sound good? Then I just replaced Jerick McKinnon with someone that's very similar to him in Duke Johnson, and I locked in a 2019 first rounder. So something like that would make a lot of sense. Or some, you know, under the radar wide receiver that I think is more valuable than consensus. You know, so I like to do those trades where, like I did this with Adam Thielen last year. We were able to sneak Adam Thielen in on people that don't quite know what they have yet. The year before that, it was Stephon Diggs. You can sneak in Stephon Diggs with people that don't know what they have. Robert Woods right now is a great example of a guy you can sneak in because there's this perception that, you know, he's just a possession receiver still that's still lingering around him. Chris Godwin, right? Chris Godwin. Oh, you know, they re-signed Cameron Brate. They extended Adam Humphries. Oh, another lost season for Chris Godwin. Oh, yeah. Oh, geez. Oh, man.
Another lost year. It was his rookie year.
Can't, can't have him eating a hole in my roster one more season. Oh, yeah, I'll let you have Chris Godwin. Well, thank you very much. I'm happy to have Chris Godwin. He's going to be great.
Well, the other player, we were talking before about Albert Wilson going over to Miami, and Jeremy said that he was interested in that, and he said that you had a take on Albert Wilson.
Well, I have Albert Wilson on a shocking number of – that was one of those things. You ever did an audit of your Dynasty League rosters and were just shocked about how how many instances of a player you have?
Yes.
I was like – I like over 50% of my rosters. I have Albert Wilson. I forgot that I had him because I liked him coming out of Georgia State, and I just sort of let him hang around.
Right.
And he hung around and he hung around and he hung around. He had that incredible 60% dominator rating. And I like that body type. I like the 5'10", 200 body type, because the NFL is becoming more and more of a slot receiver league. And that's really the body type you're looking for out of a slot receiver. You don't want, like, I hear about all these guys that people think are going to be slot receivers, like Kiki Kuti.
The bigger guys.
You hear about these small receivers that look more like J.J. Nelson than they do actual slot receivers in the actual league, right? I mean, have you paying attention on Sundays of who's playing slot? It's not guys that look like Richie James.
Right.
It's guys
right.
that look like Adam Thielen and Cooper Kupp. And Taywan Taylor, these guys are 200 pounds, bro. You can't be playing slot in the NFL at 175 pounds. That's
you're going to get decimated.
Get out of here. If you don't have J.J. Nelson speed at that size, you don't have a role outside special teams. This isn't hard. Like, this is just knowing the basics of football. This isn't even advanced metrics.
Right.
This is just football common sense. So that. I like to live in the intersection of football, common sense, and advanced metrics. That's where I like to live. That's a great place to live. I don't even know what the question was. I just wanted to say that.
Well, we were talking about the value of Albert Wilson over there in Miami now. Yes.
Albert Wilson.
I tell you that Albert Wilson is the next volume slot receiver in Miami, because that's exactly what his skill set is. That's what it always has been. When you have that high BMI, low center of gravity with great hands, the high catch rate, and the exceptional yak per target. That's what he's done. That's what Jarvis Landry, like, the things you like about Jarvis Landry are the exact things that Albert Wilson is bringing to the table. He just was on an offense with Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and Kareem Hunt. So, of course, he wasn't going to get priority. But on the Dolphins, with an underwhelming Devontae Parker thus far, and, you know, one-dimensional yet explosive, but still not ever going to be a high target share player in Kenny Stills. Lots of vacated targets. Obviously, Jarvis Landry's not there. So there's now this target vacuum happening. And you would think that it makes perfect sense, not Jakeem Grant, not Danny Amendola, but Albert Wilson to fill that void. It just makes too much sense.
So where's Danny Amendola going to play? He'd
be that guy anyway. So they gave it away with their contract. I mean, again, this is not advanced. This is just obvious.
And then, Shane, you just said something about Danny Amendola.
Yeah, what exactly are they going to do with Amendola? Are they going to split him out wide?
Player coach.
Well, because he's probably not going to get on the field much.
Player coach. He's a locker room guy. They're trying to change the culture there. Right, so that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to change the culture. They've had all these Mike Pouncey's and Bully Gates and all these problems, and they're trying to change the culture by overpaying Danny Amendola, and that's just not how you do it. You don't change the culture by signing a 33-year-old slot receiver. That's just asinine.
So we don't think the Dolphins have an analytical team, do we?
No. They're doing something. They're tearing it down, which is always the first step, is admitting you have a problem, right? Admitting your roster stinks. So at least they're doing that. That's something. That's not nothing, right? Look at Denver. Denver doesn't realize. Denver should have released Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas, and they should not have signed Case Keenum. They should have blown the whole thing sky high. but they're not. They're holding on because their general manager's the worst general manager in sports, at least the most overrated general manager in sports, not the worst. Definitely the most overrated in John Elway. He hit on a couple free agents and has drafted exactly nobody since he's been there other than quality defensive linemen. And not not game-breaking defensive linemen, right? Because he was just barely getting there, right, when they drafted like their signature defensive end. I don't know why I can't think of his name right now. He's a great player.
Von Miller? Is he DA?
Yeah, Von Miller. So
it's defense.
They technically drafted Von Miller like a second after John Elway's plane arrived in Denver. Okay. Yeah, I'm sure John Elway had a big scouting portfolio done himself on Von Miller. Get the fuck out of here. You know?
Yeah.
That's not what happened with the Von Miller draft pick. So they had a couple other, you know, Wolf and some others, some quality defensive players on the defensive line only. And that was it. Like, that is all they've drafted, is a couple guys, and they don't even stop the run well. Their weakness has been the run. What has he done? What has he accomplished? Nothing. He's a couple of the most obvious free agent signings, right? Do you guys remember? Not Peyton Manning. I'm talking about Aqib Talib. When Aqib Talib was made available, that aftershocks were felt around the league when he became available. Right? Everyone wanted him. Right? So you outbid your friends on Aqib Talib and Peyton Manning, and you're a genius. Like, get the hell out of here. You can't draft anybody, and you're not making the right moves with your assets. You're not trading. You're not doing that move where you trade a dollar for a dollar and 10 cents down tomorrow. Right? You're not doing that. You're doing the thing where it gives it it's a dead giveaway that you're not good, because you're doing the thing where you trade, you know, a dollar for 90 cents now, instead of doing the thing where you do like the Patriots and a handful of other teams, where they're usually stacking assets into the future so they can create this flywheel of perpetuating, you know, assets beyond above average, right? So the more picks in the high value rounds, second, third, fourth round than the other teams. That's what you want to do. And it's very easy to do. All you have to do is sacrifice drafting a good player this year, and then you start. It's actually like, it's the dynasty league strategy that I criticize all the time, right? But it's actually something that would work in real life, because no one's doing that, right? No one's actually, if you implement, like, that's what the Cleveland Browns did. I mean, the Cleveland Browns are run by UTH, right? That was a great job.
Yeah, they were.
It doesn't actually work in dynasty. It doesn't work in fantasy, but it actually does work in practice, in the actual National Football League, if someone has the balls to actually do that crazy tank job, where you actually are, you know, trading, you know, punting this season 100% and then going for that. But that's what Denver should have done.
The problem is no one has the balls to do that. I mean, the Sixers went the furthest with it in sports in general.
But that's the
thing. And even they gave up.
John Elway could have. He has the cachet. He has the reputation. And Sashi Brown already paved the way for this to happen. People already are starting to acknowledge the turnaround that's happening, the renaissance, the resurgence in Cleveland. It's already happening. So he could have done it. He is one of the few that could have done it the right way, but he doesn't know what he's doing. He's exactly. Just out here faking it. He's just like most of these GMs. He's just out here just whatever's available, we'll figure it out.
Grab ass and for things.
His way through it, like most of these guys. So that's why it's a shame that there's no underlying strategy. It's really. I talked to Marcus Mosier about this on my show, the Sonic Truth podcast. He had this day where he lost his innocence and he learned that there was no Oz in Dallas.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? No man there behind the curtain.
There was no magician. Behind the curtain was empty. They didn't know what they were doing. They were just sort of making it up and feeling it out and just kind of going on feelings. And there was no overarching strategy whatsoever. And he was dumbstruck by this realization.
One of the big spotlights, even on Elway, like you say, is, I mean, how many quarterbacks have they gone through now since he's been there? You know,
so bad. Trade all of them. Lynch. It was just it's so bad. And then even with the Dallas thing, in that draft they drafted Dak Prescott, but they were split. The room was split on Dak Prescott versus a Jeff Driskel, the quarterback that was at Florida and went to Louisiana Tech.
Yeah,
so the room was 50-50 between Driskel and Dak Prescott. And for whatever reason, like Michael Irvin was lobbying for Prescott or something, and Jerry Jones went Prescott. But there wasn't a lot of data backing up the Prescott decision.
Yeah, just Prescott really dropped in the laps. They were looking at
really was 51-49 Prescott, Jeff Driskel.
Right. And that just dropped in their laps anyway because they were looking at a quarterback that was – they kind of got sniped by somebody, the quarterback they were looking for. And I can't remember who it was, but
– they were going to draft Paxton Lynch. I brought that up because they were going to draft Paxton Lynch. Okay. And then that's why Denver traded up because they thought that Dallas was going to go for Paxton Lynch. Like the fact that there was this rush for Paxton Lynch is just so funny.
It is.
Because, you know, we don't know how good these guys are going to be. It wasn't clear how much better – Carson Wentz was than Paxton Lynch back then, right? Mm-hmm. It's never clear there. But there is this notion that, oh, you got to take your guy. You got to take your guy. You got to trust your board and take your guy. We're probably wrong a lot on these guys. So why not? Again, this is just the argument for trading back. And again, that's also a principle that applies to real dynasty leagues where you're usually better off trading back. In some of my listener leagues where I talk about it all the time, no one ever wants to trade up because it's known as the ultimate sucker move to trade up, especially in a dynasty league, because it's this very arrogant approach where you think that you know more than your competitors.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the humble approach is, well, you know, I acknowledge the uncertainty, right? Because remember, I think it was 3 years ago in the first round, in the middle of the first round, Demaryius Thomas was being drafted before Antonio Brown,
mm-hmm.
right? And it wasn't that long ago that was happening. And now it seems crazy. Like, there's such a wide disparity. But, right? I mean, a lot of smart people thought Demaryius Thomas was the move, not Antonio Brown. So you can go back in time and think, oh, man, geez, I traded up to get Demaryius Thomas. You know, and that now my roster is still that bad choice is still reverberating like for many years.
So well, just know because of what you gave up.
Any round, you're gonna f*** this up anyway. So just trade back, dude.
Yeah, even the year with Eddie Lacy, everybody was taking Eddie Lacy, and then Le'Veon Bell and DeAndre Hopkins are like middle end of the first round. You know. A lot of people do that. We talk about the value of draft picks and everything right now, especially. Everybody wants to get up as high as they can get. They want to try. I mean, if you get to the 101, it's fine. Yeah, but if you
try to get him.
Yeah, but
it's Saquon or bust, though. If you're not getting Saquon, I'm not really breaking my neck to get up to 102, 103, 104. Like, I like those fine enough if I can get them at a reasonable price. But like Matt's saying, and like you're about to say, but I cut you off because I'm an asshole. give me like 1, 7, 8, 9. I'd rather have those. I'd rather have multiple ones, like Matt's saying, because I'm going to get it wrong. And half the people that draft get the first round wrong. And it's not just me and it's not just you. It's everyone. The more shots you can take.
But
you do a lot of research. Like, I mean, Matt was just saying, we don't know what these guys are going to become. But if you do a lot of research, player profiler, there's so many sources for putting together your own grid for the players that you like, and just get them. Get what the player that you like the best when you're on the clock at 108 or 109. Just take the guy. You get Juju Smith-Schuster. You get Kareem Hunt. Hell, sometimes they went in the second round of dynasty.
Well, that's what I was about to say. You could have
got those were guys that I was on. Other people were on those guys too.
Well, the point.
Well, the player profiler resources are really good because they do actually help you take guys with higher upside later in the draft to find guys that are young and have potential later in the draft. That's what you're looking for. That's the great thing about a player profiler is that I'm not out here chasing youth in the high value rounds because I'm always trying to win. But in the later rounds, no, I'm not just taking Jeremy Maclin for 1 year. with Baltimore. No, I'm not doing that. I'd rather take a guy that has some youth and has some upside. Those guys are interesting. That guy now is Albert Wilson, right? That guy turned out to be Albert Wilson. And Albert Wilson and Jeremy Maclin had similar seasons last year.
It's situational.
And now Albert Wilson's teed up for 100-plus targets, and Jeremy Macklin's out of the league. So that's when you can chase youth. You just don't have to do it with the high-value picks. You can chase youth in a very smart, strategic way. Be surgical about it, and that's where the player profilers come in. The player profiler is not really going to help you decide Demaryius Thomas or Antonio Brown. Can't help you there, buddy, right? That's top of the sport. Those guys, you have to look at things like, you know, the age of that guy's quarterback, right? And is Peyton Manning, you know, going to be the worst quarterback in the league next year? Whoops. You know, if you drafted Demaryius Thomas, that was a real anvil on your head, right? Well, or on your neck, I guess.
Well, part of what I was going to say for you, though, is you were talking about moving up and moving up. Obviously, everybody was trying to move up to the 1.01, and it's very difficult to get all the way up there. So if you are right there in the mid place, who do you think in the first round right now is like really overrated, that's going to be like bust, but everybody's trying to get him because they're up there, but he shouldn't be up there?
Oh, Ronald Jones. That one's so easy. Ronald Jones. Ronald Jones is screaming bust. He's screaming bust in an epic way because he was not an epic producer at USC, and he was not active in the passing game. And the enthusiasm around him isn't quantitative. It's all about how he looks. Mm-hmm. It's like a stylistic bias. There's this, the way he runs is something that inspires for whatever reason. I don't know why. I don't watch as much tape as others, so that's why I'm not as susceptible to falling into these traps with players, these stylistic bias traps. So I'd much prefer Rashad Penny, but I see Ronald Jones going before Rashad Penny.
Yep.
And that makes absolutely no sense because Rashad Penny's floor is so much higher. You can't fuck it up, right? If you're going to actually push the button and not trade back, you cannot fuck up. There's a lot at stake. It's dynasty. We own these players for life. This is your running back core. You can't take a chance with Ronald Jones.
Yeah, production
drafting in that at slot 4 or 5 when you could have Rashad Penny. What are you doing? Do you realize who Nick Chubb is? Do you realize what Nick Chubb's pedigree looks like? Do you realize how assured Nick Chubb is of producing at the NFL level, no matter where he lands, just based on his stature and his athleticism and his brand equity coming from Georgia and all the things he has going for him? He's good. We know that. There's a baseline for Nick Chubb that's even a little bit higher than Rashad Penny, you could argue, because Rashad Penny went to San Diego State for opportunity reasons. You know Nick Chubb is going to get opportunity. So you just don't f*** it up, man. Don't get cute and go Ronald Jones over Chubb and Penny. That doesn't make sense. Right. It'd be one thing if it was redraft and you could maybe 1 year you're dealing with a boss. Now you own this guy forever. What? That's you can't be taking chances. But you see this cavalier attitude taking these guys that are really not impressive. When you look below the surface, they're not supported by these impressive analytics. And if you're not supported by the impressive analytics, I ain't drafting you in the first round.
Well, with running backs, that would be that. What about wide receiver? Who's way overrated for you with wide receiver?
Well, I'm just not drafting wide receiver in the first round unless his name's DJ Moore. Mm-hmm. I'm just not doing it because, again, roster construction-wise, I wait and figure out which wide receivers are good. And if there's a guy I'm going to overpay for, it's a young receiver I've deemed good, right? That's a big deal. Because we do not know, A, how good these guys are, and B, when they're going to get the opportunity to show off how good they are. It could be 5 years from now with Adam Thielen. But when you saw how good Adam Thielen was, you need to act. You need to act quickly before his owner doesn't know what he has. And I've even had cases where I waited until we all know what you have, and I will overpay for a Juju Smith-Schuster. because I am now certain that he is going to be good for a decade. And I'm willing to pay a lot for that guy. A lot. Right? A lot. That's what I build on in terms of the wide receiver core. I need to see it to believe it with wide receivers. Not so with running backs. We know it. When was the last first-round running back that busted? I mean, yeah. Look at Todd Gurley. Look what he went through in the first 3 years of his career, and he came out on the other side. Look at Melvin Gordon, how inefficient he was early in his career. And bust-proof. And the guys like Monte Ball, we all saw a mile away. We all saw anyone that knows anything, that even starts for a minute, you know, with advanced metrics, knows, okay, yeah, Monte Ball is a compiler with low athleticism. We stay away from those guys. Like, we know to run and hide from the Monte Balls, right? So at least we know that. And then so most of these early round guys that have these pedigrees that we're talking about, those are the guys you invest in rookie drafts. So, and you get them when they're young and they're producing at such a high level. Ezekiel Elliott may never give you what he gave you in the first couple of years. In fact, if you look at the age adjusted production curve for the average running back, they peak at age 24. Mm-hmm. Notice how young that is for any profession to peak at age 24. That's mind boggling.
That's younger than Calvin Ridley, I think.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So if you have to actually get those guys in a rookie draft in order to get all that production.
Yeah, so you don't want an old running back.
So it would be to me, it's a crime to use something that's valuable as a first round rookie pick on a non running back. I'm like, what? You realize what you're forfeiting in the near term? What, so you can stash a guy and hope he's good in 3 years? What? If I'm drafting later in the first round and those guys that I'm confident about through, say, a Royce Freeman are already off the board, well, then I'm certainly all about DJ Moore.
Is there any other wide receiver besides DJ Moore you care about? Because I know Shane just loves James Washington. So
I loved. I'm a little lower on him now.
Oh, love.
Again, we don't know the landing spot. That's the other thing about trading for draft picks now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm trading mine away.
What are you doing trading for the 102 right now? We have no idea where Chubb and Geis are going to land. It's a big deal. They could land in worst case scenario teams. You don't want that, man. You got to wait for them to land. Why would you? What's the point? I just think that that people are bored. They want the stimulus. They want to feel that they want that rush of doing a trade. They want the stimulation, right? So they can't wait. I don't even open these dynasties. Like I said, in free agency, I'll audit my teams and see the guys that landed in the plum spots, mm-hmm. you know, that increased their value, had a value spike, like an Albert Wilson, and I'll smile about that, or even like a Chris Conley. I'll be like, interesting, you know, you know, Mahomes, Chris Conley, this is interesting, you know. So some guys I'll talk myself into. Mm-hmm. That's about it. I'm not out here trying to trade for stuff. We don't know. Landing spot really matters a lot.
Do you think guys trade too much just for the sake of trading?
Yeah, there's trading to trade, man. There's going to be a flurry of activity from the Podfather Dynasty League accounts after the draft. That's when that's the fun time, when you know you get to see where all these guys land. You get to really then adjust your rankings one final time, and then you can go out and make moves. But now it's just there's so much uncertainty. We have on Patreon, we have the hardcore listeners sign up on Patreon to support the show, and we have a message board community. And my response to these trades is almost always, wait, why are you in a hurry to do this trade? You can just wait. Like before free agency, especially, I'm like, you can just wait, you know, you don't have to do the trade right now.
I think you're right, though. I think we talked about on the show before that there's these periods of time where there's all this action going on and then it lull and then there's more action and it's a lull. But for the picks wise, you should definitely wait to see their landing spot. But with all the free agent moves that went on right now, you could have made some trades and then you gave away something like an Albert Wilson or something that you needed to keep on.
But DJ Moore, though, he looks so good, and he checks so many boxes with the early breakout age, the dominator rating, the athleticism. He's so clearly the number one player in this draft that I would be so excited to get him on my roster for the long term I would absolutely consider drafting him in the first round, in the mid first round of a dynasty rookie draft for sure. And then after that, it would be Courtland Sutton, because Courtland Sutton is very exciting. He was the under the radar winner of the combine. No one thought he was this explosive or agile. It was a real fear he was going to look like Laquan Treadwell and Kelvin Benjamin athletically, and his athletic profile was nothing close to them. It was closer to an Alshon Jeffrey and a Michael Thomas. So this is a huge boon for him, because it's a real concern that he was outproduced by Trey Quinn last year. If you're not concerned that the guy, like the alpha dog receiver in college football, just got outproduced by a slot receiver, then you're not looking at the right things. Like, it's a big concern, and it's the reason why I probably would not draft him. If there was a running back that I liked, I would probably just lean on the running back. But like, for example, Royce Freeman, or I'm one of the few people that would take Royce Freeman over Courtland Sutton. There's probably not that many people that would do that. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's a slam dunk. I'll take the Royce Freeman production in year one all day. And then you know what I'm going to do? Here's what I'll do. I'll enjoy the Royce Freeman production. I'll win a championship with Royce Freeman. I'll then trade Royce Freeman to you for Courtland Sutton and a pick and another player I like. Just like the people that could trade Kareem Hunt and Alvin Kamara now for John Ross and Mike Williams and Corey Davis.
Instead of being emotional.
I'll take all three of your first rounders from last year, your wide receivers, and I'll give you one of my running backs. How about that?
No, I like that idea.
I would even do that trade. I would much rather have Hunt or Kamara than this basket of receivers that may or may not ever do anything. But, I mean, think about that. I mean, that's the perfect illustration of what we're talking about. They accrue value. You want guys that accrue value in year one, too. And that's what the running backs do.
And it's definitely a train of thought of people that they wait after that first year to get the players that they were willing to pay high for the first year, and then they get them later, which is what you're talking about, getting a package of that for a running back, which the running backs have such a small window anyways, you know?
Well, you know what I was trading for, and I was surprised that you could get him so inexpensively still, was Kenny Golladay, because I thought Kenny Golladay answered a lot of questions last year.
Yeah.
Kenny Golladay delivered splash plays, and he looks like he's translating his athleticism into on-field production in a way that's going to be sustainable, that's going to endure. I've made that judgment, okay? That's the beauty of a full season where the guy's not on your roster and you can just kind of sit back and evaluate, right?
Right.
So I've made that decision. But now the wide receiver chair has not opened up in the starting lineup yet. He's still technically a mid-round pick from a small school who's not a starter. So you can still go out and acquire him without giving up a lot. So that's the perfect guy to acquire right now, is a guy like Kenny Golladay.
And Chris Godwin. Yeah, those guys.
I can hammer the Godwin thing. And then you can go a little bit deeper where you start thinking, let's look at these rosters. And you start thinking about you can look at snap shares too. We have snap share on player profile, and we get data analysis where you can look at snap shares. You can start looking at the snap share of a guy like Trent Taylor last year. Wait a second. So let me get this straight. So this guy's playing a majority of the snaps as a rookie, and now he has Jimmy Garoppolo. What? let me do the math on this. You start doing the math on a guy like Trent Taylor, and it's like, wait a second, this guy's really valuable. Yet you can maybe get him thrown into a deal as long as you're dangling this sort of high value pick, this high equity pick. So, you know, you can be thought of as difficult to work with sometimes, which is what I get accused of sometimes, because I'm always trying to get that extra Trent Taylor thrown in. And it's frustrating to the owner, who knows just like I do that he's probably going to break out. But I'm sitting here going, well, you want this thing that I have. So you I'm not, you have to give me Trent Taylor in addition to all these other things. And then sometimes they just say, damn it, and do it.
We talked about that a couple weeks ago about having them throw in like late round picks too, you know, because some people don't value those.
Yeah. I would never give up a pick without getting the guy's fourth rounder back.
Yep. Absolutely.
Always. That's a rule. Never give up. Never be imbalanced with the trades. You can always get the fourth rounder back. That's a no brainer. I mean, because can you put that guy in that position, right? Put that guy in the position. You're not going to get that player you like because you wouldn't give up that fourth rounder.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it.
And then that fourth rounder becomes Kenny Golladay. Oh!
You hope.
Happy to draft the wide receiver in the fourth round. The slot receiver prototype, though, more than Kenny Golladay. Kenny Golladay is not usually available in the fourth round. He got pumped up to the third round last year. But the Trent Taylors are always there. Right? Yeah. They're always there. And it's so easy. It's a slot receiver league. Half of the wide receiver ones and twos are going to come out of the slot this year. That's going to happen. It's trending in that direction. So just go for those guys, man.
Well, it's perfect.
They're in the fourth round.
That's what I was just going to say. It's perfect that you're talking about the fourth round because you talked about who you thought were going to be good in the first round. But what about those later round guys? Who are you looking at? Who's this year's Kenny Golladay or
this year's
Chris
Kenny Golladay is easy. It's Justin Watson from Penn. I mean, he just slaughtered his pro day. I mean, he looks like in a vacuum, not knowing anything. Like, if I didn't know anything, right, if you took the names off the guys and just gave them headshot silhouettes, then Justin Watson would probably be your number two prospect after DJ Moore. If you just whited everything else out and just looked at the metrics. But now knowing that he didn't go to the combine and we know what NFL teams think of him, he's not going to get opportunity in year one, probably. Right. So because of that, is he really that valuable? It sucks, right? So you draft him in the fourth round, you put him on the taxi squad, and you hope there's injuries ahead of him on the depth chart. It happens, right? It happens. So that's what you do with a Justin Watson, but he is the guy I want. I mean, he checks all the boxes. And like I said, in a vacuum, he's a top five receiver in this class because no one was this dominant as he was. And then he has the upper percentile burst and speed score. I mean, this guy is crazy, right? We knew he was big and we knew he was incredibly productive. But then again, so was Jake Winicky, right? From South Dakota State. And Jake Winicky checks in with bottom percentile athleticism. And you're like, okay, this guy's not going to translate. 40 time, 4.67. Burst score, 114.8. That's 20th percentile. He looks like Chris Matthews, not the broadcaster, the ex-Seattle Seahawks receiver. Those guys just don't translate. I mean, you can say, oh, well, athleticism doesn't matter. The combine doesn't matter. It matters for Jake Winicky because we don't have successful guys that look like Jake Winicky. They don't exist, right? There are a handful of guys that have a season that are smaller, like Jake Winn, like Willie Snead is an example, or Jarvis Landry. You have some slot receivers that have this bottom percentile athleticism, but you don't have guys that stand 6'4". No. They need some explosiveness in order to win on the outside. No fucking way, right? And he's too big to play slot. It's not going to happen.
Sounds like you're talking about Jordan Matthews. The guy you just described, that sounds like Jordan Matthews. Not really able to play on the outside, a little big for the slot. We keep wondering why he hasn't been signed yet other than the injuries. Do you think, based on the size profile we were talking about earlier, do you think he's still an ideal slot? He's got that 212, right? Something 200, 210 pounds.
I think he's fine. I think when healthy, 6'3". he's fast enough to play flanker. He's fast enough to play that Davante Adams role in an offense. He's not... You think Davante Adams is much faster than Jordan Matthews?
No, I'm not a big fan of his.
Right?
I mean,
he's
necessarily.
Not.
He's done well though in that
but
system.
But those are those intermediate routes where you're running, you know, the bit deeper depth crosses. Mm-hmm. So it's fine. I mean, he's fine. He just needs to be healthy.
Right.
Show me a wide receiver from the 2016 draft class that performed at Jordan Matthews' level through the first 2 years of his career?
Yeah, no.
I mean, show him to me. I'd like to see him. I'd like to see that receiver. I mean, I'm happy to talk about him if you want to put him in front of me.
Right.
But that's how good Jordan Matthews was before the knee injury that the Eagles botched. And then he came out publicly and accused them of botching it. I mean, that you never hear that. You only hear that in lawsuits. Mm-hmm. So that, to me, we speculated that that was what happened with him. And then it's sort of confirmed by him going public with the accusation. So the question is, can he ever come back and be healthy again and have a healthy knee? I don't know. But he's not been signed yet, which is a bad sign.
It is.
You did talk about slot receivers earlier. And I don't think these guys are going to last. But Trey Quinn is definitely someone that's interesting. Mm-hmm. And you can rationalize away his late breakout age because he did transfer.
Yeah.
And he was sort of at LSU. Right. He's behind DJ Chark, and I'm blanking on the guy that looked exactly like DJ Chark last year on LSU. Same guy. Right.
I can't think of it either.
A little less explosive. He's on the Packers now.
At Malachi Dupree.
Malachi Dupree.
There's a fun
he's on
name.
An offense that really only throws the ball to the number one receiver when they ever throw. So he's like, okay, I'm out of here. I'm going to even eat a year and transfer to SMU. So then he breaks out late, but he outproduces Cortland Sutton, which is incredible. A guy that's going to play slot, I think, that's impressive is Deshaun Hamilton.
Yeah.
And it also plays into why I like Mike Gesicki so much, because there were three real alphas in that passing game. Right. And Deshaun Hamilton was the least alpha of the three.
Right.
Like, he just happened to be their number one receiver, but he didn't play the role of like an alpha dog player like Mike Gesicki. He didn't have the alpha dog athleticism like Saquon Barkley. So he really was the third receiver on that offense. And that's not even a slight. He was behind the most athletic tight end we've ever seen after Vernon Davis and the most athletic running back we've ever seen. So if you could make an excuse, a legitimate rationalization for anyone underperforming at the college level, it would be Deshaun Hamilton. So that's like where you can find some value is, who is this guy competing for targets with at the NFL level? That's the Odell Beckham corollary, right? He was competing with Jarvis Landry.
Right.
That's why he wasn't dominant, right? Turns out pretty good, right? Was Deshaun Hamilton used in special teams? Yeah. Is he a good football player? Yeah. Does he have that body type, that slot, exactly what we talked about? He's 6'1", 203. So he becomes a guy that could play right away. And he's older, but like Cooper Kupp, that just means he's more likely to play right away. He's more polished.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He just like Sterling Shepard. So he's got great agility. He looks the part of the slot receiver that the NFL teams are looking for, that are out there looking for the next Cooper Kupp. Mm-hmm. That's Deshaun Hamilton. For a slot receiver, and he may fall to the fourth round.
Yeah, the way these teams, college teams, use players, I mean, you have to consider that as a factor. Just like Michael Thomas at Ohio State. I'm an Ohio State alum. These guys get tired of me talking about it. I watch a lot of football there. They don't use wide receivers like other teams do, even though they had a guy like Michael Thomas in that offense. He still did really well. I'm sure you know all about his metrics and all that, but he didn't do a lot, so he fell off some guys' radars because he didn't have the sort of domination that a lot of these guys have. And, it happens every year, and you have to look for them. And you just pointed out some good takes there on guys we need to look at. Gesicki, he's been my favorite tight end in this class the entire time, just based on how astronomical that guy is and how he catches the football. I mean, it's pretty amazing. What do you see him becoming in the NFL? And how do you think he's the best tight end?
He's going to be like a Vernon Davis. I think he has one of these double-digit touchdown seasons in him for sure. He's 6'6". So the beauty is he's going to fill out. He's going to be a 260-pound tight end playing both ways. You know, when I say both ways, I mean running downs, passing downs. He's going to be an inline guy. That's what you want. The fallacy that you want Jordan Reed is that's wrong. You don't want Jordan Reed. Jordan Reed's an outlier. You don't want to chase the outlier. You want to chase Mike Gesicki. Right, that's why I'm not buying Trey Burton right now. Right, you can have my Trey Burtons. Okay. Mm-hmm. Throw him right in there with whatever trade we're doing and make sure you give me back, right? Make sure you give me back Trent Taylor. So
throw in.
I'll take Trent Taylor off your hands. How about that? So yeah, Mike Gesicki, I mean, he is athletic at a position that is predicated on athleticism, that you need to be a super athlete to be successful. All the great tight ends we've seen recently are these upper percentile athletes. And we know what they look like when they're not. We know what Heath Millers look like. And they're not these explosive playmakers. They're not top five fantasy options. In other positions, you can see these guys that are sub replacement, or at least they're sub athletes. Right, they're lower percentile athletes that find a way to succeed at these other positions. It's not really that way with tight ends. It's very rare. So he has the explosive athleticism, and the production wasn't a concern because his dominator rating was still good, 67th percentile. And then in the context of an offense where you're sharing targets with Deshaun Hamilton and Saquon Barkley, then Mike Gesicki's dominator is even more impressive. So now all of a sudden, I think that you're an impressive college producer with the most impressive athleticism across the board we've ever seen. So you're one of the best tight end prospects in the history of the league, just like Saquon Barkley is the best tight end, the best running back prospect in the history of college football. So if you're in like a tight end premium league, once those running backs go off the board, I did this last year with David Njoku and O.J. Howard in tight end premium, where I was just not that into those wide receivers. Thankfully. Oh, God.
Yeah.
But I avoid some landmines at wide receiver just because of my normal inclination, right? If I'm going to invest years in a player, I'm going to go ahead and invest in a Mike Gesicki in a tight end premium format. Absolutely. Because those guys are hard to find. And once they're good, they're really hard to trade for.
Well, one last thing that we talk about here with trades and player value and future stuff, you just even said you missed the landmines with some of those wide receivers last year. And with this year's class, you're already saying that you're underwhelmed with the wide receivers and everything.
Landmines galore.
Yeah. So we've seen, like with the Jerick McKinnon thing you mentioned earlier, we've seen people trading Jerick McKinnon for the 108 and the 106 and all that. But when you talk, last week we even talked about it. In one of the leagues, he got traded for the 108 straight up, and in another, he got traded for the 106 straight up.
To draft James Washington or Christian Kirk or whatever?
Well, and that's my point. So when you discussed it, you said, give me this player and your 2019 first-round pick. So,
I love the 2019 wide receiver class. That's actually a good class.
Well, that's what I wanted.
That's a class I can get excited about. That's the best class since 2014.
And that's what I wanted.
All we need, see, what's going to happen is the wide receivers you can see a mile away.
Right.
The running backs like Rashad Penny, they can come out of nowhere. Right? So all we need is some out-of-nowhere running backs, and next year's class is going to be dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
So would you be promoting or actually be behind moving your picks from this year to next year's picks is where I was going with that question.
Yes, but get players in return as well.
Exactly. Like you did with Jerick McKinnon. You took a player and a 2019 first.
I just keep saying a Trent Taylor, but a Galladay, a Taylor, a Godwin, you know, it's the same guys.
Right.
Right. But you just, you trade ahead. Yeah. You get guys you like, and then you bank the picks into next year, and you create this flywheel of additional value where the other teams just can't catch up to your assets. Mm-hmm. And you just keep becoming the bank. You want to be the bank. You know, in board games where you get to play whoever, someone gets to be the bank, you just get to be the bank over time. I'm happy to be the bank, but it is predicated on hitting on some of these late round guys. And that's why we have player profiler, so that in the late rounds, you're investing in the Kenny Galladays and the Chris Godwins, and you're avoiding the Ardarius Stewarts, where you're just dropping the guy after a year. He burned a hole in your roster for a year, so you had the carrying cost of carrying a bust. I mean, I'm not even going there with like a John Ross. Okay.
Man, he was the trap of last year's class.
I'm just saying, I'm not even going there, right? I actually John Ross's value now. But all I'm saying is you're eating this carrying cost and you're getting nothing out of it. It's nice to have a resource where you can go and look at a guy like Chris Godwin and go, this guy's probably really good. And it's going to be hard for him to bust. It's possible, certainly, that he could bust. But his profile is a lot better than Nelson Agholor. So Nelson Agholor came out. And I don't care if he was a third-round pick, because in the fourth round, you're not expecting the guy to play right away unless it's Cooper Kupp. There's some other wide receivers that you can be targeting, right? Quincy Enunwa. Mm-hmm. People forgot about Quincy Enunwa. The Jets just tendered him at the second-round level.
Mm-hmm. Think about that. That's big.
Think about that. That's a big deal.
Wasn't he undrafted?
That's where the Chargers tendered Tyrell Williams. And Tyrell Williams is an interesting guy for next year, too. Cameron Meredith is another guy. Tyler Lockett has been forgotten. Tyler Lockett's a starter. Look at the depth chart. I mean, all you have to do is pull up a depth chart, and you can find guys to, you know, to accumulate and not bust. Right? I mean, right? That's why it's nice to not have any Kelvin Benjamin, right? It's just nice not to have stench on your roster. And that's what Player Profiler helps. You know, if you've been on Player Profiler for any length of time, you go to Kelvin Benjamin's profile, his best comparable is Gargamel. This guy's clearly bad. Every efficiency metric, every college, you can go all the way back to Florida State. There was no positive indicators, right? And I remember it was such a hot take that Devin Funchess is better than Kelvin Benjamin, you know, a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
With Nathan Powell making that case. And it's like, guys, I'm not even, this doesn't feel hot at all. Like, I can't even explain to you how not hot this take feels, because I'm just looking at these profiles. Like, and I understand the draft capital, right? What is the draft capital difference? Late first round versus mid second round? That's the draft capital you're going to wave around? Really? It's like 20 picks. Really? Okay.
Well, thanks for being on here. Thanks for talking to us about all this. And
give you one more guy.
Okay, great. No, that's awesome. If you got another one, go ahead.
Slot receiver of the slot receivers who you can get thrown into any trade and the other person will not blink, Austin Carr. Austin Carr is the guy. Austin Carr is the least expensive of all these guys. Now, you could say Ryan Switzer, but Ryan Switzer's pretty small.
Yeah,
he's like 5'8". And I'm a little worried about Ryan Switzer's size and his lack of production in the college level, just because he was not dominant. I understand he was competing with Bug Howard, right? Yeah. And Mac Hollins for targets. So there's a rationalization there. But Austin Carr is 6'200" with a 10.77 93rd percentile agility score. So Austin Carr is exactly what I'm looking for.
Yeah, wow.
Exactly. And then what if I told you that the team he's on? What if I told you this? Get this. What if I told you? Wait. What if I told you? Listen to this. You're not going to believe this. What if I told you that the team he's on is the most prolific offense of the last decade who doesn't have a slot receiver? What if I told you that? What would you think then?
Everyone likes that, right? I think we all like that.
I think you would like that. He is the guy. However many roster spots you have, you have 40 roster spots, he needs to be number 40. When I have 30 roster spots, he needs to be player 30. 25 roster spots, make him player 25. I promise you, he's better than whatever is the last player you have on the roster. I promise you.
And all of this information, everything that you've been talking about, even with Austin Carr, you could find on your website, correct? Yeah, I know mentioned it a few times.
You could just go to the data analysis and checkmark dominator rating and find all the most dominant receivers in the college level, right? And there's Austin Carr in the 92nd percentile. And you can click on him and you can start exploring and go, oh, wait, this guy's, wait, is he on the Saints? What? What? What?
On the Saints?
And you just run to your leagues. You said, add.
Yeah, I'll trade you Willie Snead. Go for it.
It's, you know, it doesn't have to be hard, man.
No, that's awesome. And I'm actually going to do it before I release this episode.
Yeah. We'll go pick them up everywhere.
That's a good plan, Sipes.
But again, listen. He could get released in camp and never play a snap. Okay? This is all possible. But you can't argue that you have a player at whatever is the last player on your roster that has more upside than this guy at age 24. You just can't. Objectively, you can't. And one more interesting nugget. You'll notice there's no stats, right?
Right.
On player profiler.
Mm-hmm.
He actually logged snaps in the playoffs. They played him in the playoffs. Okay. And we just don't have the playoffs up. We just only have regular season stats. And a lot of places don't have the playoff stats up. But he did play in the playoffs. So he's not just a practice squad guy.
Yeah, they like him.
They like him. Just trust me, they like him.
I'm familiar with him as a Big Ten guy.
How do they not like him? How do you not like this guy?
Right. I didn't know what he'd become.
Well, the Patriots, apparently the word is there was huge consternation. It was tremendous consternation with the Patriots when he was their 54th guy on their roster, and they were heartbroken to cut him. And their training camp was with the Saints, right? So that's why they did the trade with Cooks. They have a relationship with the Saints. So just like the reason Garoppolo's in San Francisco is because Belichick has a relationship with Kyle Shanahan. It's not a coincidence he ended up in New Orleans.
The Patriots couldn't visit their 99 deep running back roster and be like, we can lose this guy. We're not going to sign
the Patriots
anywhere.
Want
we'll keep
in good relationships with a handful of NFC teams. They don't want Austin Carr going to the Dolphins. You understand?
Oh, yeah.
That's why.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So then you say if possibly he gets cut in the offseason, then will the Patriots snap him back up?
Of course.
So then there's another reason to stash him on your roster.
You know how many guys bounce around? How many teams did Chris Hogan play for? He was in camp with the Dolphins, remember?
Yeah.
So yeah, it happens, man. You know, the Vikings were lucky that no one poached Adam Thielen once upon a time.
I got that guy for a song just recently. Same with McKinnon. Cheap before all the hubbub on McKinnon and where he's going. I got him for in a watered-down Debbie league. I got him for a third-round pick that I probably wasn't going to use anyway.
And the Bears are begging for someone to poach Cameron Meredith. They're begging. Yeah. They're begging for it to happen.
They gave him an original tender?
Yeah, they're begging for it to happen.
That makes no sense. I guess they're still counting on Kevin White.
But nobody's taking it, though. Nobody's doing it.
Yet. I mean... Listen,
man, you can bet on everyone being stupid, but that's not generally a good idea.
Right.
I didn't know about that with Meredith.
Yeah, he just got finished visiting the Colts.
He'd be a great fit there. Yeah, they don't have much on their depth. Really. Right now, it's Chester Rogers. Think about it.
Right. Think about it.
That's not good. Definitely. I mean, and Meredith is probably the best receiver out in the. Yeah. Kidding? No. His market's looking excellent.
He'd be the
Jordan
receiver.
Matthews and Allen Hurns out there, and that's it.
Yeah, it would be the right receiver. Meredith.
Yes.
Well, again, thank you very much for coming on the show and everything. And people can find you on your Twitter. You're at fantasy_mansion. And they can go to your website, theplayerprofiler.com, and your podcasts. And we're really happy to have you here. And thank you for...
It's the Roto Underworld podcast. Just go to iTunes, type in Roto Underworld, and hold on to something.
Yes, it's a great show. Go out there and listen to it, definitely.
It is my favorite.
Again, thank you very much for coming on, and I really appreciate you being here.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Matt.
It was fun.
Well, thanks again. That was awesome. Thanks, Matt. All right. Now, before we get on to our final segment, I know, Shane, you wanted to talk about your FFPC league.
So, yeah, I have one last league, one final dynasty league that's waiting to fill, and it's actually my FFPC league, the Fantasy Football Players Championship. You go on to myffpc.com, or if you want, you can actually just go right onto our site on dynastyfootballfactory.com, and we have a link to the FFPC. You just click on that and make sure you let them know that you were referred to them by us, Dynasty Football Factory. And you can even actually play me. Like I said, I have two spots open left in my league. We have Team 11 and Team 12, unless, of course, those are their actual names, but I don't think they would have named them that. So you go on the, like I said, you can go on the Dynasty Football Factory and hit the FFPC icon there. It'll take you right to their site. If you don't feel like going on our site because you've already read everything you needed to read, you already got your rankings information, you got your IDP stuff taken care of, you can go straight to the myffpc.com. And look for league number 35. That's my league. But if you don't want to play with me, that's fine. You can join a bunch of other leagues they got on there. They have Dynasty, Best Ball. They have all types of leagues. It's a great site. I actually played on there last year in a redraft league. Made the playoffs and got knocked out in the first round. But that's neither here nor there. Go on to myffpc.com.
Awesome. And one thing that we wanted to do tonight, which we haven't done for a couple weeks, is we wanted to read a couple reviews that we got. And
you really like us.
It has been really fun. I mean, we've gotten some great reviews and some great feedback by everybody. And also somebody that's looking to get a hat. So one of the reviews we got was from at Doug's Got Moxie. And he wrote, very informative and funny podcast. Putting actual value on players or picks is very useful for the listeners. Hashtag, I want a hat.
I think he gets a hat.
So I know, Jeremy, you had those hats made that you wanted to send out to people. So I think Doug's got Moxie.
Well, now Doug's got a lid.
So Doug, hit us up on Twitter and Jeremy will hook you up with a hat.
Thanks, Doug.
We also got a really great one from Sonic Bob 82, and he said, such a fun podcast to listen to, great chemistry and a love of the game. They have provided me with great insight and thought-provoking arguments to the art of trading in fantasy. I'm all in and now listen to every episode as soon as it drops, pretty much without disappointment. One of my top four podcasts for all fantasy football. So thank you very much, Sonic Bob 82. I mean, that's a great review, and
that's an awesome review. I think he should get a hat too, even if he didn't use the hashtag.
Okay, hey,
we need to send him a hat because, quite honestly, I don't know if my mom would leave feedback that good.
No, my mom would give us a 1-star.
Oh,
and say she's very disappointed in me.
Well, Sonic Bob 82, hit us up on Twitter, and you'll get a hat as well. And again, we have some great fans. We have a lot of love out there and a lot of feedback from everybody. And it's been really a lot of fun doing the show. So we really like all this stuff. Shane? Yes.
And, besides today's awesome guest, Matt Kelly, who, again, really awesome of him to come on to our little podcast. We got some great guests coming up, too. I don't want to spoil the surprises, but there's a when we were putting together this podcast, I think the only reason I really wanted to do it was to force people to talk to me in the industry and that probably wouldn't talk to me in the real world. And I think we're going to pull that off.
Yeah.
So I'm super excited.
It seems to be working. Yeah. We've been very fortunate, and it seems like everybody that we've asked have all said yes. So, it's looking like a fun time. And then I know, Jeremy, you're going on vacation tomorrow, so you're going to be gone for, a week and a half? So
yeah, I don't have to do this next week, that's for sure.
Well,
so wait, you're not calling in?
No, I'm not calling in. I think my wife would kill me.
Yeah, not only is he not calling in, he's not going to be available on Twitter, texting, phone, websites, fantasy leagues, nothing. We're not going to be able to talk to him for a week.
Come on, I'm going to have to go to the bathroom sometime.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You tape in the bathroom and we could talk about trades.
But the other thing... No, it's going to be us, and like you said, we're not going to spoil anything yet, but we have some good guests coming up. And
we already said who we're doing next week.
No, you didn't.
I literally said we're doing Ray Austin.
Right, but no, first of all, Ray Austin is not going to be sitting in with us the whole time. He's going to be doing an interview.
No, we're going to interview him. Not everyone's going to sit in with us the whole time.
Well, exactly. Just look like you Matt. Look at Matt. Yeah.
That's and why we're taping on random nights.
Yeah, no, great. You know, Jeremy, I hope you have a great vacation. And the other thing is, in a couple weeks, I'm going to be at the NFL draft. So we'll be doing the show remotely from the draft. And I believe you two guys are going to try to hook up somewhere at the same time. So that should be a fun show when we do that as well.
Yeah, because and that night I'll be probably drinking heavily while we podcast and making trades. So if you're in any of my leagues, just send me offers because the especially day one of the draft, I'm going to overpay like a mother for those rookie picks.
Thank you for saying it as just mother.
Yeah, not mother.
Yeah, so look for the upcoming guest. Look for our exclusive draft show. Look for Jeremy being on vacation. And all of that. And if you guys want to follow us on Twitter, we're at Dynasty Trades HQ. And you can also hear us on all the different platforms. Go ahead.
Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Pod Paradise, Pod Addict, CastBox. Someday we'd like to be on Spotify, but Michael Sipes has dropped the ball on that one.
I'm sorry, I was indisposed. I will get us on Spotify. And also, you can find us on the website, along with all of our other numerous podcasts that we have on the network. And also look for everything to show up on YouTube. And we're going to have some video stuff coming soon, too. So thank you very much for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. And hopefully you'll catch us again next week.
One.
Come on, say goodbye.
I said one.
I know, but Jeremy didn't say anything. Jeremy, are you asleep?
Jeremy left. He left for vacation.
See you in 2 weeks.
Peace.